Welcome into the Sports Objective. A big night for Pirate baseball. We'll talk second half of the show. In our second half hour, we'll be talking to Chris Edwards, play-by-play voice of the Duke Blue Devils. Pirates putting on them tonight, 6-1. Great pitching tonight for Cam Colmore in relief and C.J. Mayhew. We'll be talking about this sec. But now, we'll talk to former ECU head basketball coach Mike Steele. Maybe we can, Coach, can we have some support group kind of thing tonight? Can you help us? Because I thought we were going to have a game to talk about Saturday night, and I just found out this morning we're not going to have the game.
No, I talked to Duels about an hour ago, and he, I don't know how, coaching is a tough gig anyway, but I don't know how every time it seems like, because I think this year we had a chance to have a team that could have finished in the middle of the pack in the conference. I mean, I think that we had a good enough team. If we're good enough to beat Houston, at home, if we're good enough to beat Houston, we can certainly play with everybody else because the conference is not great this year. I mean, Memphis isn't as good as they've been, and Cincinnati's not very good. This would have been a good year for us to make a big jump, and it's just a shame that we just haven't had guys, we haven't had, as you and I talked for a second there, Duel said it's been almost 3 weeks since they've been able to play 5-on-5. They got managers playing. They got all these walk-ons. It's tough.
Yeah. With the Tulsa game being canceled, how many games do we have a chance to get in before the conference tournament, theoretically?
Two.
And that's if we play a week from Saturday. I mean, and that's assuming that we're going to be healthy and assuming that Central Florida will be healthy. So that would be two. And I don't know offhand what our record is now. Kyle, do you know?
No, it's Dave.
I know we're hold on, I'll get it to you in a second. Hold
somebody on, wake Bubba up and find out what the record is.
We're 8-8.
If you put a gun to my head, I'd say 11-8.
8-8. We're 500. We're 500, Coach.
Okay, I thought we were. I'm giving us credit for three wins we don't have.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, I knew 7-4 wasn't right. So that's actually the home record we have. So I double checked. It's 8-8. And we started out, Coach, as you know, we were talking about the non-conference schedule booming, 7-1. We have the Christmas break. We come back. And since the beginning of the year, it's been one thing after the other. I feel really bad. I was going to ask you this, being a former coach. How tough is it? I mean, just the fact that we are able to play ball games with COVID is a big deal. But I mean, this is the breakout year, I really believe, for Dooley. And I know it's got to be frustrating for the coaching staff, for the players, how bad they want to play. But yet they took care of business with a non-conference schedule, and they're doing better with the conference schedule now, with getting some wins now. And I just really feel bad for them.
Oh, no, I think they're all real frustrated. And in fact, Duels, it was funny today, he said that, he was kind of dragging because, he was sick and he was kind of dragging going into practice because they knew the game had been canceled. And he said the guys were at practice today. They were going after it. Said it was, they were 4-on-4 and guys were competing. And, I think Joe's got his guys in and, his guys work hard. I've seen some practices. They work, they bust it. We're headed in the right direction. This is, unfortunately, this year would have been a year I think we would have jumped into the middle of the pack. And then you keep building on it. And, like right now, Cincinnati's as bad as they've been in probably 30 years. I mean, and it's not easy to jump back and all of a sudden be good again. And so there was an opening there. And, Wichita State has bounced back better than I thought they would. Once they lost, once they got rid of their coach, I thought they would really struggle this year, but they've, to their credit, they're pretty good. If in the tournament, if Wichita State gets to the final game, I think they have a chance to get an at-large.
Coach, at this point, with the risk of traveling and these last two games, do you think Coach Dooley wants to play them, or do you think he just wants to make sure everybody's healthy for the conference tournament?
Oh, I think that's a tough deal. There's no guarantee that they'll be healthy even if we don't play the games.
True enough.
All they got to do is go in the wrong classroom or go in the wrong, just there's no guarantee. So as competitive as Joe is, I'm sure he wants to play the games. But on the other hand, I think that he knows that it would be really nice for the team and for the coaches and for all of us fans. It would really be nice to go on a nice run and win one or two games in the tournament.
Coach, we have folks, if you're watching now or listening, you can actually put your comments there, and then we'll put them up on the screen. And this is for you, Coach. Chuck is asking, are the basketball players following COVID protocol?
Oh, I think that I'm sure they're supposed to, and I'm sure that they're checking on them. But again, you know, like one of the guys that I work with, he was as protective as anybody I've ever seen in this, and he just got it last week. So, I mean, there's really no guarantee. I mean, I think that when you're dealing with guys the age of these guys, you know, you can only do so much.
Yeah, and let's be real. I mean, we've been dealing with this mess for a year. People have social lives. People have girlfriends. I mean, and you may be doing what you're supposed to do, but is your girlfriend doing what she's supposed to do? And
no, is your girlfriend's sister doing what she's supposed
exactly,
to do?
Or, you exactly. Know,
it's a bad
and what domino. And what are you doing with your girlfriend's sister?
Okay, wait a minute. That's a whole.
I'm sorry I lost you there. that's perfect.
Yeah. Let's move on. Let's talk basketball with as a former coach, as someone who's been a coach and at East Carolina, and you see the winning now, and you see that Joe's doing an excellent job. I think he is. You're the expert, not me, with the recruiting, and all those guys have been working hard. I feel like even though that we have the tough year, you feel like next year we won't have to worry about COVID, especially when we get into basketball season of later this year in November. And next year, we can see even bigger things. I guess that's what we have to sell right now is hope, right?
Oh, without question. And I think that, as guys keep working, I think, in my opinion, I would really like to see us get a really good point guard. You know, everybody talks about getting big guys, whatever. I'd like to see us get a point guard who's, you know, a coach on the floor that gets guys in the right spots, that can handle the ball against pressure, can make free throws down the stretch. And you got to hope our perimeter guys keep getting better shooting the basketball. Because, I mean, let's face it, when we beat Houston, we're like 10 for 16 or whatever from the three-point line. And then we play, I thought, equally hard against SMU and Memphis, and we're 3 for 25.
Yeah.
I mean, we played good enough to beat both of those teams if we're shooting 30-35% from the three-point line.
Yeah, what do you do about that? I mean, you mentioned Houston red hot at three, and then against Memphis and SMU, couldn't hit a three if our life depended on it. I mean, what do you do to just make yourself average on a consistent basis from three?
No, you know, it's interesting that it seems like every other team, and you think about it, when you watch some of the teams, like when somebody – everybody's got somebody on the team that when they have a wide-open shot, you know they're going to make it. I mean, you just know they're going to make it. When they don't make it, like when a J.J. Redick would miss a shot, it'd be like, oh, my gosh, you know, did the rim move or what happened? But everybody's got somebody that when they're open, they're going to make it, or you think they are. And we just don't have that guy. I mean, we have guys that can make two or three in a row, but then they might miss five in a row. I mean, wide open. And so I think we got to continue to – I know how hard they work at that, but I think we've got to continue to find – like a perimeter guy that can really, really shoot.
And Coach, that's what's so frustrating is the very fact that as Kyle and Bubba and I've talked about is the very fact last year there were so many games that were so close. If you make two or three three-pointers, you win the game. This year we had some like that again, and that's what's frustrating is you see guys that if you feel like now you have talent to compete in the American, where before we were lucky just to be on the court with some of the teams. I'm just being honest. I know that you're an honest person. You tell it like it is. I love that. But now you feel like you finally have the athleticism, the physicality, you have the length, you have guys that are very athletic, and then guys that you feel like they can shoot. And then when the spotlight's on, I don't know, there's times when they're so streaky that they look like one of the best teams in the country. And then the next game, they look like they've never touched a basketball.
Well, you know, last night I watched, I think it's interesting. You know, I watched the Duke game last night. And if you just watched that one game, you would say that you would think Duke might win the national championship because they shot 70% from the 3-point. I mean, they made every single 3-point shot. When do you think the last time that Duke, in the first half, Duke shot one free throw at home? Wow. I mean, usually they've shot 10 free throws before the other team finishes their warm-ups. They've shot, I mean, it's brutal. But they never took a shot inside the three. Now, if you take that and you let them shoot 35%, you know, they're going to lose those games. But, man, were they good last night shooting the basketball.
It comes down to one. That was a nice segue, Coach, because the very fact that a lot of these teams have one-and-done players, a lot of these teams are relying on freshman players, they're really struggling this year because those guys didn't really get a non-conference. And then it's almost like the spotlight of having the conference play. And they're, I don't know, it just seems like they're not ready for, you know, prime time. And it's taken most of the conference season before they can really get the legs under them.
With all that, and I think the other thing is that, you know, because of COVID, people haven't been able to recruit, bring people on campus. And because of the FBI, the shoe companies are not paying kids, paying AAU guys and paying parents to send kids to Kansas and Kentucky and Duke and, you know, all the big time schools. And they've been doing it forever. And this is 2 years in a row where they haven't done that. And it makes a big difference. You know, if you would have thought that Kentucky, Michigan State, 2 weeks ago, Duke, Carolina, we're not even going to be in the NCAA tournament. The odds on that in Vegas would have been astronomical. And,
right.
You know, and they're not getting the same, at least the last 2 years, they're not getting the same guys.
That's a good point. I didn't thought about
it. When the money stops, coming in, guys go other places. Pretty simple.
All right, we're going to put you on the spot, Coach, here. Chuck has another question. Who's better, Coach, Blue or Jaden Gardner?
I love Jaden Gardner, but there's no comparison. Not zero comparison. Blue Edwards. The thing about Blue could do everything, and he was, you know, he averaged 27, but he could handle the ball, he could pass it, he could do everything. And Jaden, like I said, I love how hard he plays, but he's really limited when he gets out there on the perimeter. I mean, passing, handling the basketball, feeding the post, making good decisions. That's not his game. His game is, in the last couple games, he got back to his game, which was being in the post, getting fouled, you know, playing as hard as you can possibly play, because he does. I mean, he does. But you let him get it outside 15 feet, and usually something not so good happens.
And Coach, how does Jaden improve his game to go to the next level? I feel like he's a bubble player where he has a chance to make it the next level for NBA. But I'm not the expert. You are. What is it going to take for him to go to the next level for the NBA?
I think Jaden really needs to concentrate on East Carolina and be the best college player he can be. I think that he needs to be the best. Absolute best college player, and he would go down in East Carolina. He'll be probably the leading scorer, the rebounder, but that's what he needs to focus on.
Let's move shift gears, talk about different teams around the country, because it would be nice for our team. I thought when we were going to have you on, we would have games to premiere or talk about, but unfortunately,
no,
that's
games.
Not the case.
No, yeah. <games.
laughs> Think about how frustrating it'd be right now for a Pirate fan had we beaten Memphis and SMU and then turn around and not been able to play. I mean, after that Houston win, as close as those SMU and Memphis games were, if the threes were falling, and then we had to go, you know, 19 days or I don't know how many days before you end up playing a game, Pirate fans would be pulling the hair out.
No, and you know, Kyle, if we would have, we played good enough. I think the encouraging thing is you know, 2 years ago, if we played Memphis or SMU, they were just so much bigger and stronger and more athletic, and I mean, we weren't going to beat those guys. And this, after we beat Houston, I thought we'd probably have a pretty big letdown going to SMU and going, you know, playing SMU, and but going to Memphis, and we were right in the games. And you know, if we make 40% of our threes, I think we win both those games.
Yeah, no doubt.
So that's it. I mean, yeah, that's really encouraging. And I'm telling you, Duels and his staff, they work. It's just incredible. You know, he'll ask me all the time, "You want to come to practice?" I'm going, "If it's raining, I'll be there. If it's not, I'm on the golf course, pal. You know, I can't help you. I can't help you." But they work so hard. I mean, Duels has like one habit, and that's recruiting. That's it. That's it. That's his habit, recruiting.
Dave was about, well, about 6 years. Well, we got a comment first.
Yeah, this is from Johnny Gardner, one of our loyal listeners and viewers. Going back to Coach's time, can he speak about what it was like coaching Blue when he knew they had the opportunity for the NBA? And also, how good would Gus Hill been if he hadn't had the injury that today players are able to bounce back from a lot easier than those days? I don't think our fans realize how athletic he was before the injury.
You know, my first year here, Gus was our best player, and Gus averaged 20 points, and he played on one leg. He literally played on one leg. Now, sometimes he played on no legs on defense, but he played with one leg on offense. And, you know, the thing that people forget about Blue Edwards, when I got here, Blue got suspended with four or five other guys for some off-the-court stuff. And so the other guys didn't get back to school. Blue had guys step up for him and help him. And so I coached Blue for 1 year where he didn't play. And he'll be the first one to tell you that probably was the turning point for him the year he didn't play, because he was on our second group. I mean, we'd play pickup games after, because, you know, obviously I was much younger then, but we'd play the coaches against Blue and two managers. And if we beat them, I'd call him at midnight and say, you know, if I got my ass beat like you did today against a bunch of old guys, I'd be out practicing. I'd be shooting. And I mean, I would do things like that to Blue almost every day. And he didn't have any idea how good. I mean, I played with numerous guys that played in the league, and Blue was better than all of them. He was better than all of them. And that's why he played in the NBA for 10 years. But he didn't have any concept of how, and I'll tell you, Dave, like the first game I coached Blue, you know, I'm coming from the Midwest and he's a North Carolina boy, and we're playing, and he's, you know, the Carolina guys put their fist up when they want to get a blow. So he puts his fist up, and one of my assistants says, "Blue needs a blow." And I said, "Well, he ain't getting a blow. You know, we're not doing that." And so we have a timeout. And Blue goes, "Coach," he said, I was dying out there. Did you see?" I said, "No, I saw you running around with your fist up. You look pretty stupid. You're making both of us look pretty foolish. Put your fist down." And Blue, "You're not coming out of the game." He goes, "Coach, I was dying." I said, "I promise you, if you die, it'll be the lead-in story on ESPN, and we'll put a little plaque right here where you fall, but you ain't coming out of the game now." No, I used to look down, they'd say, "Blue needs a blow." I said, "Okay, who would you like to put in? Go ahead, look down the bench there and pick somebody out that you want to take Blue Edwards out." Oh, yeah. He was a great player.
Yeah, special player. Would you say he's got to be the best player we've ever had at East Carolina? I mean, isn't that fair to say that?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I mean, and I know we've had some good ones, and, you know, but nobody that played in the NBA for 10 years. I mean, that's just, you know, it just shows how good he was. And he played, you know, probably six of those years with Utah. And if he hadn't broke like his thumb in a pickup game when he was getting ready to sign a 3-year contract with Vancouver for $12 million. And he broke his thumb and ended up not playing again. Yeah, he never he went to Europe, maybe played a year or two, but yeah, it was really a sad deal. But he was that good.
One question: you've been on the recruiting trail, and one thing that I know Jeff Charles and Joe Dooley talked about last night is the town of Kinston, something that Kyle Barber talks about all the time. But they brought that up: how many great players? And you're a student of the game. You're a guy that knows more about basketball than we'll ever know. Why can't we get more players from Kinston right in our backyard?
The problem we have with Kinston is that they're too good. The ones that we want are, have been too good. I saw Jerry Stackhouse play in eighth grade, and I told my guys, we don't need to send him any letters. He's going to Carolina. He's going to Carolina. I saw him playing a pickup game with 3-on-3 over at the old Gold's Gym. They won. They're all playing against college guys, and he's in eighth grade. He was by far the best player. And, wow. You know, when you – the prop, one of the tough things at East Carolina is that we're it's ACC country. And when you grow up and Carolina and Duke and, you know, Wake at their time – NC State at their time, it's just a tough, tough deal. And we had great relationship with our coaches there. It's just a, it's tough to get guys. And it's no different. I guess the difference is like, if you're in Ohio and you're a great player, if you, you're either going to Ohio State, but if you want to stay in state, you're going to Cincinnati. And if you're in Tennessee and you're a great player, you're going to Tennessee. But then you're going to Memphis.
Yep.
And the challenge we have here is if you're a great player, you've got all those ACC teams, and then you cross over to South Carolina, Virginia, and Virginia Tech. I mean, it's a it's easy to see who the really good players are, but it's tough to get them away from that ACC.
The thing that irritates me about Kinston. You know, it's obviously you want the star players, but then you look and you got a kid right now at Temple. They're one of their best players. He's a freshman or a sophomore from Kinston.
Yeah.
You look at that kid. I'm terrible with names, Coach. It's one of my biggest problems. Back around 2010, 2011, the kid that played at Winthrop that was from Kinston who had a cup of coffee in the NBA. I mean, that's the kids that really just – irks my nerves that we don't get somehow, or we miss on or whatever.
No, you know, when I was at DePauw, Division III school, we had some really, really good teams. And what I focused on was trying to get the second or third or fourth best player on teams that were really good, teams that were winning state championships.
Yeah.
And you're right. Sometimes those guys slip through the cracks, and by the time they're juniors and seniors, they're really good because they grew up knowing how hard you have to play and how and work to be a good player. Yeah, and that happens sometimes.
Coach, we have another Chuck is chiming in again. He's got another old school question for you, so we can put that up there. He said, I remember those days back in the CAA. You had UNCW, had Ronson, Dave Navy had David Robinson, Richmond had Johnny Newman, and ECU had Blue.
No, those were they were some great players. The Rossum was gone. You know, I didn't coach against him, but not only did we have some great players, but you know, Dick Tarrant was at Richmond, and Dick Tarrant had great success. He was a great coach, and the and Lefty Giselle was at James Madison. I mean, those and Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes was at George Mason. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And I've got a good story for you on Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes, he and I became really good friends, and he goes from George Mason to Providence. And the year he goes, the year before in the final game was Georgetown against Villanova. So Raleigh Massimino, the first meeting they have, he goes to Raleigh Massimino and he says, you know, I'm a new coach. I'm a young guy. Can you give me some advice? And Raleigh says, yeah, I'll give you some great advice. Take your most trusted assistant coach, the guy that you would trust with your children. and put him in charge of the snow cone machine at camp. Because you charge a dollar and you only have 8 cents in the product. Don't sell Pepsi's, Cokes, anything else, nothing but snow cones. He said, you'll make more in those 6 weeks of camp than you made at George Mason last year. Yeah. And then we went on vacation together, and he takes me in his room, and he's got a suitcase full of $5 bills. And he said, I'm buying everything. He said, my banker, if you put it in the bank, I got to pay on it. He'll probably end up getting busted. I guess it's been long enough now. It's okay. But no, he had all these $5 bills because of the snow cone. That was the advice Riley gave me. So funny.
Oh my goodness, that's great. That's why we love doing the show, Coach.
Hey, what did you think about Boeheim, his comments, and then Jay Billis' comments on the kid? What'd you guys think?
I mean, the situation is such that I think the kid is being honest. I think that he's not healthy. I think you have a situation like we're talking about East Carolina. People could use it, look at it as, I see where people are looking at it like, well, we're not going to make the tournament, so I'm just going to opt out. But on the flip side of that, if the kid's not 100% and they think he's a lottery pick, if he's playing on an injured foot, I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Coach? I mean, I've been debating it back and forth, but I don't think that maybe they, I guess Duke could have done a better job of selling it as, in other words, that it really is that he's not healthy and that he's not going to get better playing. I don't know. What do you think?
If you look, do a little research, put Bub in charge. His 4 years in high school, he didn't start high school in one school and end there the same year. Never did. So he went someplace else during the year. AAU, the same thing. No, he's a guy that every time he's had a chance to think to move, he moves. And he may end up being a lottery pick, but I'll be stunned if he is. And Boeheim, he made that point because he for sure knew that this Duke team is better without him than they were with him.
And they've won four straight, Coach.
And they were 0-5. Yeah, they're undefeated without him, and they were on a 5-game losing streak with him. Wow. He didn't fit. And sometimes guys just don't fit. But I think Boeheim was being honest, and I think Jay Billis jumped in for the kid, but probably didn't do as much research because that kid's not done moving. You watch. Yeah. He may play a lot of places, but one of them I don't think is going to be in the NBA.
I love it. I love it, Coach. Bubba wants to ask you about coaching Steve Holler, who was in Hoosiers.
Steve Holler was in Hoosiers, and he ended up being a great dentist because he wasn't a very good basketball player. But he became a great dentist. No, you know what? Here's how stupid the NCAA is. I had three guys, Griff Mills, who was one of my assistants. I had three kids that were in Hoosiers. And Hollers had a nice role. The other two guys were on the bench. Because of basketball was involved. Now, they're a Division III school paying their own way to school. No scholarship. The NCAA suspended them for 5 games because they had a job that was involved in a basketball.
Wow.
So the NBA, the NCAA didn't just become stupid overnight. They were stupid 25 years ago.
That's real stupid.
I could not get anybody's attention to say they're not on scholarship. They're paying at that time $30,000 a year to come to school to have me scream at them. So this is not a great gig for them. Yeah. Crazy.
But Coach, good dentist. I need one. Coach, talk about your league, man, the Big Ten, looking really, really good this year. How do you feel about it?
Who's that?
The Big Ten?
Oh, the Big Ten. You know what? I was supposed to go see them play Michigan State last week, and we got snowed out, so we couldn't get in. But, you know, they don't have any seniors. Matt Painter's a great coach. He really is a good, really good coach. But they have no seniors. They got three freshman starters. and this was supposed to be a big rebuilding year, and they've got a lot of people have them being in the brackets, a 5 or 6 seed, but they've got a 7-4 kid from Canada who has only played for one semester. He was a hockey player and a soccer player. And if you watch him play, you won't miss him because he's 7-4. He's really skilled, but he goes right into the post every time, like guys that are 30 years old in the YMCA, you know, they just go down and root into the low post and they jump into you and stuff. But I called Painter and I said, boy, you guys have done a great job teaching this. He said, no, Mike, we haven't done anything. He said he didn't play any AAU, so he doesn't know he's supposed to stop and shoot threes, even though he's 7'4". He just goes right where his one coach told him to go, and it's right on the block, and he has a chance to really be good. I mean, really be good. So, no, they've been fun. They're fun to watch, and Matt, he's got a good staff. They're all – I stay in touch with those guys, and they got a nice team, really nice team.
Coach, as we sit here on, what is it, February 23rd? I don't even know the date. Who would you project to be your final four as of today?
Oh my, you know, that's hard to do when you know Kentucky and Duke and Carolina are all going to be in there. Now we don't even know if they're going to be in the tournament. So, oh my gosh. Well, for me watching the games, Gonzaga appears to be by far the best team in the country. And Baylor, you know, Baylor, it's amazing. Like, Baylor's undefeated, but boy, they've missed a lot of games. They're not playing games with only 7 or 8 guys. They're just saying, we're not going to play. We're not going to play unless we're healthy because we know we're going to be a number one seed. We're not going to get beat 2 or 3 times because we're not healthy. But I'd say Gonzaga for sure. And then the Big Ten is going to have, they're going to have 1 or 2 teams up there. I mean, Michigan's really, really good. Illinois is really talented. And then the Big 12. Ohio State had some guys hurt early. Purdue beat Ohio State twice, which has really helped move us up. But they're healthy now. And, you know, I think the other thing that when you talk about these teams that are normally really good, it has really hurt the Kansases, the Dukes, the places where they're normally sold out and the atmosphere is crazy. And that home court advantage, you know, Ramey will argue with me on this, but I said, this would be the year to be a referee. You know, nobody's yelling at you. Fans aren't screaming at you. And the coaches can only yell so much because everybody can hear them. I said, it's just like doing a scrimmage game. They should go to 2 officials and pay them half price. That's what I tell Ramey. Pay them half as much. But,
oh my God.
If you look in the box score, Duke shoots 12 free throws, their opponents shoot 12. I mean, almost every Kansas is shooting less free throws at home than their opponents. That never would happen if there were 17,000 people there. Never happened.
Coach, we have another comment from Johnny Gardner. He thoughts about you growing up and watching Rick Mount, seeing Larry Bird as a high school player.
You know, first of all, I'm not that damn old. But Rick Mount, I got to Purdue 2 years after Rick had graduated. And Rick had to go down as one of the greatest shooters of all time. They've got a video clip of him. He scored 62 points against Iowa on the road, and there was no three-point line. There was no three-point line. And so they've got the video and they put the 3-point line in and he would have had 72 or 73.
Wow.
And, oh my God.
And Larry Bird, I was coaching. It was my first coaching job at Butler. I was assistant coach and this was 1979. It was 79 when Bird and Magic went to the Final Four.
Magic.
And we played them and I did the scout and you know, I go watch him and, you know, he's slow. He's, you know, he can shoot. He's tough. But, man, he was the best passer. I mean, I came back. I just couldn't believe the passes. And so when we played him, we start off in a box and one, and the first time Larry doesn't get it, next time he doesn't get it. And I'm kind of thinking, hey, you know, we're going to be all right. The third time he goes through, and on Joe Maloney, I'll never forget it, Joe Maloney cold cocks him. He takes a cheap shot and decks him.
At halftime, oh, my God.
At halftime, we had 26, and Larry had 28. It's like, you know, no, he was so good. And you watch the videos of him.
Yeah.
He was just an incredible player. And, you know, I played with Jerry Seastein, who played with him for 4 years. He was at Purdue, and he and I played together for 2 years, but then he played on three or four championship teams with Bird. And he said that Bird about once every 10 days would come into practice and say, I'm bored with you guys. I'm going to play left-handed today. And he would just play left-handed, shoot every shot left-handed. And he said, Steele, after about 20 minutes, you just would think he was left-handed. He'd shoot threes left-handed. God. He said it was incredible. And most people don't know that, but when you think about him, some of the passes that you remember him making, a lot of them were with his left hand. He was completely ambidextrous.
He was amphibious.
Kind of like that NC State guy.
Charles Shackford, God rest his soul. Yeah, well. Yeah. Oh, speaking of Kinston, Kyle, Kyle from Kinston.
I'm not from Kinston, but live near there. I'm from there.
Yeah, you do. Green County guy. Yeah. Mike, thank you so much for coming on tonight, and we appreciate you. You're always fun, and I hope you'll come back next time maybe we can talk some ECU basketball with you.
That would be nice. No, and you know, I think like the last football game, I told Coach Houston, I sent him a text. I said, when we beat SMU, I said, that was the best half of football that I've seen us play since Coach Holtz was here. And then I said, no, you know, that was the best half of football I've ever seen East Carolina play. And
wow.
So that should, I mean, we should have scored two more touchdowns. It could have been 50-7 at halftime, and they were ranked 20th in the country.
I don't know. That second half against UNC in 2014 was pretty good.
No, it was good, but we gave up a lot of points, too. No.
Gave up 41.
Yep. No, Kyle, I wasn't really asking you, which I was just making, yeah, but thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. No problem. I'm always here to give my opinion.
No, that's, yeah. All right, guys, that was fun. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Coach, as always.
See you guys.
All right, have a good night. All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Coach Mike Steele, man, we need to have his – we'll let him sub for us, Kyle, and being here whenever we're on vacation or something, we can have Coach Mike Steele do the show. He would be fantastic.
Yeah. Next up,
a guy that definitely knows how to host a show, and he can come on our show and host anytime he wants. Our good friend, the play-by-play voice of the Duke Blue Devils, Chris Edwards, is going to be joining us. Big win for the Pirates tonight. Didn't see the seventh inning coming. What a tight game. And then all of a sudden, the Pirates were fortunate to get four runs in the seventh, and that really was a difference in the game. That and the pitching by Colemore and C.J. Mayhew. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the you kind of watched the whole ball game, and you know, I was looking for it to come down to the ninth. I even had extra innings in the back of my head. And, I thought we maybe just went a one-run game. But it sure was nice to put it away there in the seventh and kind of cruise to a victory.
No doubt. And we're going to have a lot of fun. Let's see if we can get Chris here. Chris Edwards joining us now. Hey, Chris, how are you, man?
Guys, good to be with you. Appreciate you having me on as always.
Yeah, thanks for your patience there. We had Coach Mike Steele, and like I was saying, he can have his own show, or he can certainly sub for us anytime. And you're a guy that can, anytime that you want to come on and do our show, then you're a great friend, and we appreciate you on each time with the visit. I was really impressed with the game, and like Kyle and I were talking about, it was a real nail biter. And that seventh inning, I was really shocked. As you call in the game, you're very close to the Duke program. That Duke is a really good team. That was a, I guess, a surprise maybe for the seventh inning for the ECU frame.
Yeah, a little bit, guys. You know, I think if you look at the way that that inning developed, I mean, you give ECU a lot of credit. Executed a hit and run perfectly, just a couple of balls that found holes. I mean, that's the three-run home run there. It's kind of a line drive home run. Right fielder almost made a catch. Obviously, the wind was blowing out to right. Then we saw a couple of balls get up in the jet stream there and go out for ECU. This team, just a really well-played game. I think if you look at the box score, you say, oh, ECU won the game. I said, you know, that was a really well-played game. That was a lot closer than the final line score is going to indicate. I think these are two teams that are going to make deep runs in the NCAA tournament. Both have legitimate shots, make super regionals, maybe get to Omaha. Obviously, a lot of things have to go right. But I think if you're Chris Pollard for Duke or Cliff Godwin for ECU, you're really encouraged about the way your clubs have played over the first four games.
Yeah, the Blue Devils go down to Conway, play three against the Chanticleers. Then you have a long bus trip back to Durham. You guys had some travel issues, I believe, and didn't get back to Durham until like 4 a.m, something like that. And then had to turn right back around and play East Carolina on a Tuesday. Though I really don't think that affected the game very much. You guys looked like you had plenty of energy. Now maybe that spoke to some of the problems at the plate where you really didn't get your bats going.
Yeah, I mean, could have, but I think really first and foremost you credit ECU pitching. My gosh, those guys were great. Obviously, looked like Spivey maybe had a blister issue there early in the game. Thought Colemore came in and threw the baseball great for the Pirates. And then look, what about the job that Mayhew did out of the bullpen? Well, 4 1/3, didn't allow a run, struck out 6 or 7. That guy was lights out. I was talking to some folks before the game, really high on that ECU pitching staff. I mean, especially this year, the way the conference is going to shake out in the American, having to play four games in a weekend, not play any midweeks, you're going to need a bunch of arms. And I think the outing by Mayhew, obviously Colemore's a veteran guy. He's been there since 2016. I think that's going to pay dividends for the Pirates once the league play starts.
Yeah, speaking of league play, you guys have a tough start to the season. You play Coastal, you play East Carolina, now you got to jump right into the conference play.
Yeah, and against a really good Boston College team too, guys. I mean, you look at the Eagles, they've got potentially two first-rounders Friday and Saturday. You could make a case that all 14 teams that play baseball in the ACC could make the NCAA tournament. This might be the best team that Mike Gambino's had in 5 or 6 years. I remember BC a few years ago went to a super regional with Miami. It was a Nip-Tuck super. I think it could be another super regional type team. They're an older club, especially at the plate. They're old on the mound, as most clubs are, I think, this year. It's just going to be really interesting to see how the ACC shakes out, because I don't think there's an off weekend right now in league play.
Yeah, and with the lack, and not just the ACC, other conferences are going to have to deal with it too. But with so many teams from the ACC potentially making the regionals, having so many conference games, or a lack of non-conference games is a better way to put it. Hey, how is that going to shake out? You know, you're going to be beating up each other. I think that's going to affect the records, and you're not going to see many ACC schools against out-of-conference competition. How do you think that's going to end up affecting things as we get towards regional time? I mean, how many teams do you think realistically the ACC could have in the NCAA tournament? And again, with so many conference games, how do you think that's going to – are you going to cannibalize yourselves?
Yeah, you absolutely are. I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think realistically probably 8 or 9 teams, maybe. Maybe you sneak 10, but probably 8 or 9, somewhere in that ballpark. Because, yeah, everyone is going to beat up on each other. You're right. And I think the lack of non-conference games actually hurts some of the mid-majors more than it hurts the Power Five, because you don't have a chance to get those signature non-conference wins. I mean, ECU, you guys know, are not playing any midweek games once conference play starts. Duke's still playing some of those midweek games, but you don't have a chance for maybe a team like a William & Mary, just using this off the top of my head. William & Mary may not be playing very many midweek, so there's an opportunity not to play these ACC schools and get some marquee wins. On the flip side, for the ACC schools, you're not playing some of these midweek games, and now not a chance to lose some of those games that could hurt you down the road. With some of those RPI teams that may have an high RPI, I think it hurts the mid-majors more, but you're right. I mean, everybody's going to beat up on everybody else. So it's going to be interesting to see
What? Got a bad connection here.
Election committee values this year. Are they going to value RPI? Are they going to value road wins or strength of schedule? I think it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, Chris, I was going to bring up the very point of the fact that obviously it seems like this year it's going to favor the committee.
Yeah, we got a bad connection with Chris here. Chris, you're cutting in and out on us.
Yeah, we'll see what we can get there. I was just going to make the point, Kyle, that and we can get Chris back here. But the very fact of the matter, it looks like that with the ACC, SEC, some of the bigger Big 12, as we've had Mike Rooney on from D1 Baseball, it's going to help them. But some of the mid-major teams, it's going to be hurting them for their chances to get in to play in the regional where if you have that many teams from the ACC, we know the SEC is very good. We know the Big 12 is very good. They're going to get a good number of teams. Those three leagues there.
But we got to use some common sense here and historically know that you know, this ain't basketball. You know, well, we'll use football as a better example. We know that the Coastal Carolina is historically really good. We know that East Carolina historically is really good. We know, you know, Louisiana Lafayette, South Alabama, Stetson, et cetera, is really good, whether they're in a Power 5 league or not. So hopefully there's some common sense by the committee come June.
Yeah, look, guys, I don't think we're going to see all Power 5 teams in the NCAA tournament by any stretch. I think, obviously, you're going to get the automatic qualifiers. I think the big question, too, is what does the committee do with the Big Ten? Because the Big Ten played a conference-only schedule this year, and there's obviously some flux to that, too. I just think there's a lot more questions right now than we have answers. And hopefully by the time we get down toward May and June and get close to selection time, we have some of those answers.
Yeah, no doubt.
Chris, what about the issue with fans obviously not being in attendance or very few in North Carolina? But, Kyle, we've talked on air and obviously we talked a lot off air about COVID and this particular case about herd immunity. My prayer is that for regionals and super regionals and College World Series, we'll see a lot more fans than we have right now.
Yeah, me too, guys. That's my hope. And I mean, hopefully we can get everybody vaccinated. And by the time we get to a postseason play, it'll be good to have some fans in the stands yelling and hollering. That's what makes college baseball great. And I think we're all hoping for that, fingers crossed. And man, things certainly starting to look like they're turning a corner a little bit. And I'm excited to finally get back to a sense of normal. Tonight felt really good to be back in a ballpark, and I'm hoping for more of that moving forward.
Are you guys being, you know, there is no fans to speak of. Are you guys playing all your games on campus this year? None at the DBAP?
The DBAP is this weekend.
No, actually right now, we're everything is downtown right now, yeah.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah. Chris, one question I have, speaking of downtown and a school you know very well being across the way from you, not too far, what was your thoughts as a baseball guy? Just really disappointed to see North Carolina Central cutting baseball. I love the fact they're playing at the old Durham Athletic Park. It's absolutely gorgeous. Those of you that know the movie Bull Durham, that's where I'm talking about, that stadium. And I grew up there in the town, and I grew up going to many games there. What are your thoughts on that, of losing that program? I'm really hurt by it.
Yeah, I think we all are. I really am. Coach Kerner does such a great job at NC Central, and they've gotten better every year. They've given Duke a game every single season. Had a really good game with NC State last year before. I think they might have beaten the state. I can't exactly remember. I know it was like a one-run game. But Coach Kerner's done so much for that program. You know, they reeved since they did baseball, 10, 15 years ago. My hope and my gut feeling is they'll have baseball back at some point down the road. But I think this just goes to show you the impact that COVID has had on college athletics and their budgets, especially the mid-majors, the HBCUs. And this is just going to further create the divide between the group of six, the Power Five of the group of six, and everybody else, because not everybody can keep up. And it's sad because it's a great crosstown rival for Duke. It's a great tribute to the old ballpark and the history of baseball in Durham, because it's such a rich baseball history, really in the state, but in Durham too. And I'm just really sad for all the people involved in the program.
Have you heard any, is there any feedback as far as any of the folks there, the alums that want to keep baseball, or do you think that it's going to be something, like you said, it's going to be like potentially on the shelf and the best we can hope for is a few years down the road to get it back?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best we can hope for right now. I haven't heard anything, but honestly, I haven't done a whole lot of digging either, just because things have been so hectic. I'm going to try to reach out to some friends that I've got just to see what they're thinking, but certainly hope that some people will try to save it. You know, that happened with a couple of programs that got cut this past summer where some of the alums rallied to bring the program back. Would be great to see that happen again at NC Central.
No doubt about it. As far as well, let's talk again about Duke. We thank a lot of Coach Pollard and yourself. Outstanding ball club. One of the issues that people have mentioned is about pitching. What do you think about the pitching for Duke moving forward in the ACC schedule?
You know, it's going to be tough. It's a tough first couple of weeks for the Blue Devils. You look at they got Boston College this weekend. Then NC State. I mean, NC State obviously really good. So is Boston College. Pitt's competitive. Last I looked, Pitt was winning their game tonight against Jacksonville. But to answer your question, certainly there are some key returners for Duke. Josh Nifong, great start for Duke tonight. Cooper Stinson was great for Duke last year in that shortened season. He got overshadowed a lot by Bryce Jarvis because of what Jarvis did with the perfect game and all that other stuff. But you have to remember, Stinson had a .42 ERA. He looked really good in his first outing against Coastal on Saturday. There are some questions at the back end of the bullpen. Some roles aren't yet defined, but Josh Allen, who came in and threw for Duke tonight, the last guy that threw for the Blue Devils, seems to me like he's starting to become the closer. He got three really big outs in a tough spot in his first career appearance in the ninth inning against Coastal in that last game of the series on Sunday. I think Allen's a guy at the back end. Duke's really high on some guys like Billy Seidel and Nick Conte. I think those are going to be guys that will factor. Then you've got some older guys, too, even guys we haven't seen yet. So it's a nice balance. The question is going to be, how do you decide who you throw in these situations? It's a good problem to have. But I like the makeup of this Duke club, especially the bullpen. They're old positionally. I think it's a team that's really going to contend in the ACC. And for Duke to be picked fourth in the Coastal, I think shows the depth of the league, too.
One question I had for you before we let you go. I know you're driving back to the Triangle. You had a chance to watch our basketball team with East Carolina with our good friend. We call him Jason Halter, but Jason Halter. What are your thoughts as far as the ECU basketball team? A very sad situation now where they've missed a whole bunch of days of practice and well, certainly not practice, but as far as 5-on-5, and it's going to be about 20 some days since they played a basketball game. I just want to get your thoughts before you've seen that team, so I wanted to see what you think.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking, and I was really fortunate to be with Jay and really fortunate to be at Minji's. I guess it was 3 weeks, a month ago now, for that win over Houston. Boy, what a fun night, and I've told you guys this, and I've told a lot of people. It was so much fun to be there for that, but it was so sad at the same time because I know how much Minji's would have been rocking if people were in seats, and that was sad, and hopefully we have a shared experience like that again sometime soon. Yeah, it's a really tough situation, and I feel bad for Coach Dooley and the program because there was so much positive that they had going. I mean, they were starting to get things rolling in the right direction again. It played really well after that game against Houston, and now just to have things halted again, it sort of reminds you of things just coming to a close last year a little bit, doesn't it? Like you had all this momentum, and all of a sudden, boom, it's pulled out from under you again. And the future is still bright for ECU basketball. I really believe that. I think they've got a good core group. Obviously, they can build around Gardner, who's going to be there hopefully for one more year. And some of those other pieces that they've got that's really stepped up. You know, we talked a lot about ECU needing to find a second scorer to supplement what Jaden Gardner's been doing. Guys like J.J. Miles and Tristan Newton have really stepped in and absorbed that. Thought the Pirates were playing better defensively. Luigi DeBoe gave them some solid minutes the last time I saw them against Houston. I'm really encouraged by the upside of this team. Obviously, Coach Dooley's got things going now. And I give them a couple of years, and I think the Pirates are really going to contend in the American.
That would be, I'll tell you one thing, Kyle, you follow Pirate sports for a long time like myself. That would be amazing, Chris. It's one of those things where it's kind of like Kyle is a Cubs fan, and he finally got the World Series ring there a couple years ago. But
yeah,
there was a lot of years that my buddy here, my brother from a different mother, was pulling for the Cubs, and we love Wrigley Field and all that at WGN. But it's kind of that way for basketball. We just don't. At least the Cubs had some bright spots going to the World Series.
Yeah, I'll tell you the NCAA tournament and forget winning it. Let's just say making it seems like a further away dream than winning the World Series was for the Cubs.
That's true. We only have two appearances.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we only have 72 and 93 are the only times we've made appearances in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, but I really think that there's a high upside for this basketball team. I mean, the win over Houston is going to be huge from a recruiting standpoint. But the fact that ECU has won so many of those in-state games, I think back to that game against UNCW, the Pirates won in overtime back in November, December. Those kind of games are going to be huge for recruiting. You get a chance now with this ESPN contract to play on national TV a lot. You know, all of your games are going to be on TV in some form, whether they're on ESPN Plus or on linear television. That's a big part of the recruiting that people don't talk about. Obviously, having the practice facilities now are big. And Coach Dooley knows how to win. I mean, he knows how to win at ECU. He's got the blueprint. And that's the guy you want at the helm of your ship if you're ECU, I think.
No question about it. He's one of the best. We had Mike Steele, the former coach of ECU, said his number one thing that he likes to do is recruit for recruiting. That's what he likes to do. So we'll let him continue recruiting, and eventually we'll have a basketball game. And, Chris, I know you're driving.
That's right.
I know you're driving. Appreciate you coming on. How can people listen to the broadcast this coming weekend for the Blue Devils?
Yeah, appreciate you asking. I always appreciate you guys having me on. You can find us on the TuneIn Radio app. Just search for Duke Baseball. It's probably the easiest way. And then, hey, I'll be back with you guys on TV in Greenville tomorrow. I've got ECU women on their game against Cincinnati. So, check us out. Me and Coach Mac McCarthy, 6 o'clock tomorrow on ESPN Plus. That'll be a fun one, too. So, always good to be with you guys, and I appreciate you having me on.
We'll definitely tune in, my friend, tomorrow night and the weekend. And please be safe. Love to have you back on soon.
Yo, it's my plan, Alex. We'll talk again soon. Always enjoy, friends.
All right. Take care, Chris. Appreciate you, buddy, very much. Chris Edwards, play-by-play voice of the Duke Blue Devils. And Kyle, a great night for the Pirates. 6-1. I know the score of that seventh inning, but I knew it was going to be a nail biter. It was, but to have that seventh inning for that frame for the Pirates, I was, not that I'm shocked that we won the game. I just thought it would be more like 2-1, 3-1. 6-1 over a ranked opponent, in-state rival. Definitely a big win for the Pirates, and going to be a big test for us to see about coming up this weekend. Georgia Southern on the road. How do we handle going on the road, the first road trip of the season for the Pirates?
Yeah, it was a great win tonight. Nothing surprising about it to me. I expected it. The seventh inning though was a lot of fun. It was nice to see us put it away. On the road this weekend. First road test of the year. Georgia Southern's got a good baseball program. They're in the Sun Belt. Got, you know, like most teams do, they got everybody back from last year. Pitching travels. When you got pitching, you can take it on the road. You're probably going to be pretty solid in midweek. And we got a lot of pitching. So I expect us to go down to Statesboro. And, you know, it's hard to get a sweep against a quality opponent on the road. So it'd be nice if we can, but you at least want to go down there and take 2 out of 3 and keep things rolling and come back home to Greenville with a series win.
Good to hear that we may have Gavin this weekend and Gavin Williams, but certainly we're going to definitely need him down the line. So it's great that we have we have depth all over the place, but especially pitching. That's what's going to make the difference in May and June, and we'll see how that plays out. Hey, guys, I want to remind you that Extra Innings, we'll have that on Sunday. That's brought to you by Next Level Training Center in Greenville. For those of you that have an 8-year-old or 9-year-old in your family, whether it be a son, a grandson, a nephew, whatever the case may be, or maybe the neighbor next door, They're having a really big thing at Next Level, March the 7th. That's Sunday, 10:30 to 1. They don't open until 1 o'clock. I signed up my son, Alexander, but it's 10:30 to 1. If your son or whoever you are that know that they have an 8-year-old or 9-year-old, they're going to be playing baseball. I highly recommend you to go to this clinic at Next Level Training Center. Of course, we appreciate their sponsorship and the friendship of Trent Brent and company there. They do an excellent job. So call Next Level, sign your kid up. Again, that's for 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds on Sunday, March the 7th. Right before they open up, there's going to be plenty of social distancing and space as they have a huge facility. It's going to be tremendous. So definitely check that out. Want to thank their, again, sponsoring Extra Innings. And also we want to give a shout out to pgxgloves.com. Our good friend Mark Minakazi Kaz has been really good to us, and I want to thank him. He even sponsored in Extra Innings. He has pgxgloves.com has the PGX Player of the Game. So we have that as well. But Extra Innings, again, presented by Next Level Training Center, and we want to thank them for their support of the program. And, of course, pgxgloves.com. They have everything, Kyle. I'll tell you what. I got two sets of gloves, hitting gloves, batting gloves, I should say, for Alexander. Hopefully he can't hear me. That's for his birthday. But I ordered that over the weekend. Great, great quality stuff. I mean, you can't get it. They've got everything there at pgxgloves.com. And I think we're going to get some Kyle Flamagrange T-shirts there, too.
Yeah, those will sell.
Breaking news.
Those will sell like hotcakes. Yeah, pgxgloves.com. And don't forget to put in promo code ECU and save yourself 25% at checkout, everyone.
And thanks to all the listeners and viewers, Kaz is telling us that there are a lot of people taking advantage of that 25% off. And that's how he knows that they watch or listen to ECU. And I love that. Hashtag Barber 2024 is Kyle is going to run for president. Wow, that's breaking news here on the Sports Objective.
Wow, all right.
I tell you one thing, those inaugural ball parties will be legendary. They'll
you
be
know epic. What? You know what? Don't get me started, but I can probably do a better job than what we've had in there the last for the last however long.
Yeah, anyway, we're not political on there. I didn't mean it to go political, but anyway, before we get in more trouble, thanks to Mike Steele. He kept me laughing. I love Chris Edwards. He's been so good to us, just like his broadcast partner, Jay Sunhalter. And then, of course, Coach Mack, who has also been on our show tomorrow at 6 o'clock, Lady Pirates. Kim McNeil's got the ladies playing very well. How about the and let's brag about the softball team. We're going to try to get Courtney Oliver on, too. They've got a great start so far, Kyle. They've been doing very well. Our teams are just rocking. All our teams are doing great right now. I'm so excited. It's never been a better time to be a Pirate. And, hey, what can I say? It's great when we win. That's what it's all about. All right. For Chris Edwards, Mike Steele, thank you, Bubba Rosenbaum, producing behind the scenes. He's multitasking tonight, and we appreciate him. Thanks, Kyle, buddy. Appreciate you very much. Cannot wait to one day to go with you to Omaha. Hopefully it'll be this year or sometime soon. But in the meantime, we'll have the games on ESPN Plus and the radio with our good friend Corey Glory and Coach O. Thanks, guys, very much. Appreciate you. We'll see you on Thursday nights. We'll have legendary announcer Bob Rathburn. We'll have a preview of the Georgia Southern games down in Statesboro for the Pirates, the first road trip again for ECU. Until next time, I'm Dave Rich. We'll see you next time. Go Pirates. Good night, everybody. Up and lean side to side.